results on the symmetric Kugel-Chomsky model in on various lattices in two dimensions, where we found a rich variety of different ground states. So on the square lattice and on the checkerboard lattice, we found different ordered states. But then in the polycomb lattice, it turns out that quantum fluctuations are so strong so that it adds to one of the very few known algebraic spin orbital liquid states. So a state without any true long-range order, but with algebraic decaying correlations. And I will show you results from several methods which support this idea. Okay, so these results have been published in these three papers, which have been obtained in collaboration with Frederik Miller, Andreas Leuchli, Carlo Penck, Miklos Laszko, and Matthias Troyer. Okay, so I will first introduce the model and then also the motivation. And actually, this model was motivated from two different fields. So first from spin orbital systems, but then also from ultra-cold atoms. And in this context, we considered the so-called SU4 Heisenberg model, which is actually equivalent to the symmetric Kugel-Chomsky model, as we will see. Then in the second part, I would like to give you a brief overview of the methods which we have used in our collaboration. In particular, I would like to tell you about the method I'm using, which is called IPEPS. So that's a special version of PEPS for an infinite lattice in two dimensions. So one of the goals of this talk is also to show you a bit the recent progress with this method. And then finally, I will discuss these different states on these lattices. So by the end of the talk, you will hopefully understand what kind of states these pictures here represent. Okay, so let's start with something simple. So I guess everyone knows the standard SU2 Heisenberg model, which is an effective model of the Hubbard model in the limit of strong on-site repulsion compared to the Hopping, and one particle per site, so when the system is in a mod-insulating state. So here's the Hamiltonian, where S are simply spin 1/2 operators, and we have two possible basis states per lattice site. Yes, so for example, spin up and spin down. And it is well known that the ground state of this model has Neel order, or anti-ferromagnetic order, as shown here. Okay, so the physics here is well understood, but what we will consider here now is the case, what happens if we have an orbital degeneracy on each side. So on each side, the electron can be in two different orbital states, here denoted by A and B. And that's a situation which can occur in certain transition metal oxides, so where these orbitals, for example, correspond to two degenerate EG orbitals. And then it turns out that the interplay between spin and orbital degrees of freedom can lead to interesting and non-trivial physics, as we will see. And now the simplest model which captures or which describes this situation is this symmetric Kugel-Chomsky model. So it's a simple model for a mod-insulating state which has a twofold orbital degeneracy. Okay, again, here are the spin operators, and these T here are pseudo-spin 1/2 operators for the orbital states. So in total, we have four basis states per lattice site, so we have a local dimension of four in this system. Now here we consider the special case where the Hubbard model from which this model is derived from has equal couplings for the orbitals, which leads to a symmetric form here. And this leads to a large symmetry of SU4 in this model. Okay, of course, in a real material, we don't have such a large symmetry, so usually we are away from this symmetric point. But nevertheless, we can see this as a minimal model to study the interplay between spin and orbitals and see what possible phases could occur in such a system. And these phases can possibly account for some of the unusual behavior observed in some materials. So an example would be lithium nickel oxide, which is a triangular lattice compound where in experiments, no signs of spin and orbital ordering has been found down to very low temperatures. So it has been speculated that this could be a spin orbital liquid state. And whether this is really true or not is still being debated. And now a more recent example is this barium copper antimony compound here, where the copper sites effectively form a honeycomb lattice. And also in this case, no signs of spin ordering have been found down to low temperatures. So this could be a candidate for a spin orbital liquid. And of course, these experiments have created a lot of excitement because there are only very few known candidates for such states.
So, why does the copper have a better state? The copper has a
better state? Yes. Yes, it should have. I mean, yeah, yes, I will not display any detail yet. EG, yes. Exactly.
Copper is D9. Okay.
So there's one hole. All right. And there's a W degree state.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So in what is it possible to think of this as in terms of two Heisenberg planes in terms of the space, or is it not equivalent? Like the A's are just another spin.
Yes, so we can think of spins and pseudo spins in the end. Yes, but I will describe. I will come to this model here, which is actually equivalent here. So maybe it's easier to understand this one. So this is the so-called SU4 Heisenberg model, which was actually the original model we looked at, and these two are equivalent. So let me quickly explain what this model, how we can understand this model. So let's go back to the SU2 spin model. And now we can rewrite this model also as a two-color model. So with two different colors, red and green here. And then now with this permutation operator, PIJ, which simply exchanges two colors on neighboring sides. Now these SU and Heisenberg models, you can think of them as generalizations to several colors. So instead of two colors, we have n colors. And as in the SU2 case, these SU and Heisenberg models can be derived from a Hubbard model for n species of fermions in a mod-insulating state. And here we'll consider the case where we have exactly one particle per side, so which corresponds to the fundamental representation of SUn on each side. Now, there has been increasing interest in these type of models thanks to recent proposals to realize these systems with ultra-cold atoms in optical lattices, so more precisely with alkaline earth atoms, where the idea is that you can exploit different nuclear spin states. So for example, you can take strontium 87 and then exploit different nuclear spin states and then reach n up to 10, so maximally 10 colors. So the idea is to identify these nuclear spin states with these colors here. And then because the interactions are independent of the nuclear spin, you get this large SUn symmetry. So the results I'm going to show you, in principle, also serve as a prediction for these experiments. Okay, so these two models are equivalent, and we can now also identify these four basis states with these four colors. And I will also later explain the states in terms of these colors here. Okay, so we use different methods to study this model. So one is linear flavor wave theory, which is simply the same as spin wave theory, but generalized to several colors of fermions. So the idea is to start from a product state and then add quantum fluctuations on top of the product state on the harmonic level. And these results were provided by Carlo and Frederick. Then Andreas Leuchli provided exact diagonalization results for clusters up to 24 sites. And this already corresponds to a huge Hilbert space when you remember that the local dimension in this system is 4. Another question is, can we also get accurate simulation results for large 2D systems? Because one of the reasons why this model has not been solved before is actually that quantum Monte Carlo suffers from the negative sign problem here. So we really need some other method to predict the ground state here.
So how much memory do we need for 24 sites?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Symmetry? But there's a lot of symmetries there, so yeah, it's still indeed possible.
Is it like 2 to the 48 with symmetries?
Yeah, well, apparently he can do it. Andreas can do it. But probably not many other people. So. Okay, so now for the Honeycomb model, we also used variational Monte Carlo, which works well when you have a good intuition for a trial wave function. And then finally, the method I'm using is this IPEPS method. So that's a tensor network method for two-dimensional systems. And I mean, in short, the easiest way to think about this is simply that it's a variational ansatz for a 2D wave function in the thermodynamic limit, where the accuracy can be systematically controlled with the bond dimension. Okay, so let me use a few slides to introduce this method. So you have heard about DMRG today, and you also have heard about matrix product states, which is the underlying ansatz of the DMRG method. So one can say that this method really has revolutionized the simulation of one-dimensional systems, and recently there's also been a lot of progress in simulating cylindric systems with DMRG. Then you have heard that there are also other tensor networks like the MIRA and some other ones. And now there are also the two-dimensional extensions of these, like the PEPS or the 2D MIRA. There's also MIRA for two-dimensional systems. And now, of course, the whole motivation here is to repeat the enormous success of DMRG with a tensor network that is specially designed for 2D systems. But now you can see that these tensor networks in 2D also look more complicated than in 1D, which in the end means that the involved algorithms are much more complicated. But nevertheless, a lot of progress has been made now with these methods in recent years. And with the results I will show you, you can also get a feeling of the performance of this method. Now, let me just explain in one slide what a tensor network actually is. So I'm the last one today, so but I thought maybe it's still useful for those who don't know what a tensor network ansatz is. Just one slide, what actually the main idea is. And I just make an example for a lattice with six sides. So this is a wave function which is expanded in the local basis. So these each index goes over the two basis states in the lattice, and we just take six lattice sides. And now this coefficients here, you can see them as a multi-dimensional array with six indices, or we can also call it a tensor. And now there's a graphical notation for this, so we can show it as this big thing here with six legs, which correspond to these six indices. And now the idea is simply that we want to decompose this big thing into small pieces. This collection of small tensors connected by lines is what we call a tensor network. So it's an efficient representation of the coefficients of the wave function. And we can compute these coefficients again simply by multiplying all the tensors together and sum over the joint indices, and then you obtain the coefficient of the wave function. And of course, the aim is that this is an accurate approximation of the exact one. And then, of course, the most important difference is that here we have exponentially many coefficients here with system size, whereas in the tensor network ansatz, the scaling of the number of parameters is only polynomial in D and the number of sides. So that's what we mean by an efficient representation of the wave function. Okay. So here's the MPS again. So you have one tensor per lattice side, which are connected by this horizontal bond, which has a bond dimension D. So this bond dimension D controls the size of these tensors, or in other words, the number of variational parameters you have in these tensors. So the more variational parameters, the more accurate your ansatz can be. Now the PEPS can simply be seen as a natural extension of this. So we again have exactly one tensor per lattice site, but now on a two-dimensional lattice, and every tensor is connected to its neighbors. Now an IPEPS is an ansatz for 2D in the thermodynamic limit. And now if your state is translation invariant, you can, in principle, take a tensor and simply copy it on each side here. But now, since we are working in the thermodynamic limit, translational symmetry can be spontaneously broken. And then it's important that we use a unit cell of tensors, like here, for example, a 4x2 unit cell, which is periodically repeated. And this unit cell has to match the structure of the ground state. Now, of course, in advance, we usually don't know what the structure of the ground state will be. So in practice, what we do is to run simulations with different unit cell sizes and then see which one gives the lowest variational energy. Okay, so we talked about the structures here of tensor networks, but of course, there are more ingredients in the whole algorithm. So the next step is actually to find the best variational parameters in these tensors. And there are different techniques how this can be done, so we won't go into details. And then finally, once you have found the best state, so the best approximation to the ground state, you can compute observables from that wave function. Okay, so now, before I show you the actual results, I thought it's maybe useful to show you some benchmark results obtained with IPEPS. What we have seen so far is that as a variational method, IPEPS provides very competitive variational energies. So for example, for the TJ model, we obtained better variational energies than the best variational Monte Carlo results. And I'm not going to show you this, but if anyone is interested, I can show this later. And then here is an example for the SU2 Heisenberg model. So here would be the quantum Monte Carlo energy extrapolated to the thermodynamic limit. And here's the IPEPS result for D equals to 10. And you can see here that we match this energy up to 4 digits. So this already looks good, but what is more difficult to obtain is the order parameter, so which is the staggered magnetization in this case. So you can see here that's the quantum Monte Carlo data of the staggered magnetization as a function of 1 over the system size. And by performing the extrapolation to the thermodynamic limits, they were really able to get this up to many digits. But you can also see that there are quite strong finite size effects here. Now in IPEPS, we don't have finite size effects, but finite D effects. So you can see here how the staggered magnetization decreases as a function of bond dimension here. And then what you can also see is that here we don't have a nice smooth curve as on this side, so it's not really clear how we can do an accurate extrapolation. So we nevertheless can try several fits and then determine the order parameter with a relative error of about 2%. So
does this have to do with the symmetry, the fact that these
maybe
these numbers come in and maybe your representation of your SU2 symmetry has to fit into this D? And if you kind of jump the D equal to, I mean, by 1, then of course there's no representation anymore that fits there, and that's
it could be related to this, yes. So it would be interesting to, yes, better understand this so that we can do better extrapolations. But in the end, what is important here is that we get a good estimate for the order parameter. And also, more importantly, is that we can distinguish an ordered phase from a disordered one. And I would like to show you another example to show this. So that would be, again, the SU2 Heisenberg model, but with two different bonds in the system. So here we have these green bonds. And then the blue bonds where we can adjust the strength with this coupling J here. So if J is equals to 0, then we are just left with these green bonds here. And in this case, the ground state is simply given by the coupled singlets. So in this case, the magnetization vanishes. And then for J equals 1, we are back at the Heisenberg model where we know that we have a nil order. And now with quantum Monte Carlo, it has been shown that there is a phase transition for this particular value here. And now the question is, what do we get with IPEPS close to this critical point here? Now, when we are slightly above the critical point, so in the nil phase, then we obtain something which still extrapolates to a finite value as it should. So we can again try different extrapolations and we get a finite value, which also is in agreement with the Monte Carlo data. Then exactly at the critical point, we obtain either a small value or something which goes to zero. But then slightly below the critical point, we really obtain something which clearly extrapolates to zero. Okay, so, but you can also see that for the largest bond dimension we used, we would still predict an ordered state. So this means that these extrapolations in D are really important to distinguish between an ordered and disordered phase. But nevertheless, it seems to be possible even when we're close to a critical point. So I will use such type of extrapolations later on. Okay, so this concludes what I wanted to say about the method. So let's switch back now to the model. And first, I just want to say what we would expect classically in this case. And so by taking a product state, ansatz, and one can easily see that the energy gets minimized if we take orthogonal states on neighboring sides. So we can simply take different colors on neighboring sides. And in the SU2 case, this directly leads to the nil order. So the classical solution already qualitatively predicts the correct ground state. But now, if we go to larger n, then of course there are many ways how to put the colors in such a way that two neighboring colors are orthogonal. So there's an extensive classical ground state degeneracy, and that's of course one of the key features of a frustrated system. And then we can expect that this extensive ground state degeneracy gets lifted by quantum fluctuations, but of course it's always hard to predict in advance how this is going to happen. Now let me mention some previous predictions for the symmetric Kugel-Chomsky model. So on the triangular lattice and the square lattice, it has been predicted that the ground state could be a spin orbital liquid made of plaquettes. So these plaquettes are SU4 singlets. So you could imagine that the ground state is made of such plaquettes which resonate between different configurations. So that would be some type of SU4 RBB state. Then in other works, it was predicted that there could actually be long-range order in these plaquettes. And then in this work by Wang and Vishwanath, they predicted a Z2 spin orbital liquid. So based on a VMC study where they used the projected wave functions with a Majorana fermion representation. So that's a variational calculation, so I can also show you then a comparison with this energy. Okay, now let me show you the IPEPS results on the square lattice. So what you see here is the energy per site as a function of 1 over the bond dimension. So what you can see here is how this variational energy improves when we increase the bond dimension. Now we can also see that the best variational energy we obtain here is lower than this energy from the previous variational study. Now the best energy we obtained here was in a 4 × 2 unit cell. So again, we have this unit cell here, which is periodically repeated. Okay, so what's the state we find here? What I show you here are the bond energies in this unit cell. So the lower a bond energy, the thicker such a gray line. So you can see that the state forms dimers. So there's a strong bonds between these two sites and these two sites and so on. And now we can also measure the local color density on each side. And that's given by these pie charts here. And then you can see that there are two different types of dimers. So there's this dimer A, which has more of colors yellow and blue, and then this dimer B, which has more of the other two colors. And these two types of dimers form a nil order or checkerboard order, as shown in this cartoon here. But of course, these dimers are not SU4 singlets because you need four sides to form an SU4 singlet. And then let me also mention that this is only one way how the SU4 symmetry can be spontaneously broken. So of course, there are many other ways.
So one or two in the symmetry.
Exactly, yes. Yes, exactly.
So if I just put the blue and yellow and if I just put the colors, that's sufficient to satisfy the full pattern, isn't it?
Again?
Why do you say this has dimer order? It seems like it's only male order.
Oh, because we have already translational symmetry breaking in the energies here.
Well, but if I take the bond between the A bond and compare it to the vertical bond, they're clearly different. One is a bond between blue, yellow. The other is a bond between blue, yellow, and red, green. So what should they be equal? It's just a nail state. Because the nail order parameter is a more complicated manifold.
Yes, you could call it. Yeah. We could call it like this as well. But I mean, it's not a nil order between two sublattices, but we first have kind of a dimer formation.
It's and not then, a vector, yes, but it's a more complicated thing.
Yes, exactly. So yes, it's...
So you know what the moment is? Do you know what the order of moment is?
Yes, I will show it on a few slides. So I just wanted to say that this is only one of the way the SU4 symmetry can be broken. So as in the SU2 case, we can rotate the nil vector. And in the same sense, you can also get another symmetry broken state here. So that was in the color language. And then in the language of spin and orbitals, you can, for example, think of this state as having spin singlets between neighboring sites and then orbital order on top of it. So like a BB and on one of the dimers and the AA on the other one. Now let me just give you some intuition why this could be a good low energy state. So it turns out that these dimers here are the ground state of the two-side problem. So the ground state of the two-side problem is six-fold degenerate, which is because you can form six different combinations out of two colors. So the ground state manifold is six-fold degenerate and corresponds to the six-dimensional EREP of SU4. So these dimers have low energy because they're ground state of the two-side problem. Now we can derive an effective model in terms of these dimers, which you can think of as a SU4 Heisenberg model with the six-dimensional EREP on each side. And that's a model which has been studied in other works, and it has been shown that that this model exhibits a nil order. So you can think of it somehow as a two-step process. You can think you have some dimer formation, and then on top of the dimer formation, you form a nil order. Okay. So then I mentioned before that it's important to look at the order parameters as a function of D. So that's what we do here. So this would be the dimer order parameter, which corresponds to the difference of the high energy bonds minus the low energy bonds. So you see that it decreases slightly with increasing D, but it seems to remain finite in the large D limit. So this means that translational symmetry is indeed broken here. And then this M here is the local ordered moment of SU4. So a finite M implies that SU4 symmetry is broken. And then you can see here how it decreases with increasing D, but it seems to nevertheless go to a finite value in the large D limit, at least based on this data we have here. So this would indicate that SU4 symmetry is indeed broken here. Okay, so the state is dimerized and at the same time breaks SU4 symmetry. And we also got some support from exact dimerization here. Now, let me just mention that we had the problem that linear flavor wave theory predicts another state, which is this Plaquette state here. And then we were wondering why the results are different and which one we should actually trust. And then luckily, we were able to reproduce this result also with IPEPS, simply by taking a 4x4 unit cell and a small bond dimension. But then it turns out that this state is not stable when we go to large D. So that shows that quantum fluctuations in the end destroy this state and select this one. So that's kind of a nice feature of IPEPS, that we can do a systematic study of our solution as a function of the bond dimension, where this D somehow controls the amount of quantum fluctuation or entanglement in the system. Okay, so for D equals one, I mentioned earlier, so in this case, the IPEP simply corresponds to a product state, and in this case, we have an infinite degeneracy. If you move to D equals two, you add short-range quantum fluctuations to your system, which then select this Plaquette state. But then we can go beyond this, so we can go to, if you go above D equals five, then finally this dimer nil order state is selected. And this one seems to remain stable up to D equals 16, and also when we do extrapolations to the infinity limit. Okay, so that's what we do. We do a systematic study as a function of D, where D controls the quantum fluctuations or the entanglement in the system. And just the take-home picture you can take here is that we have some sort of control knob with which we can control the quantum fluctuations. So if you go to D equals one, then this is how the PEPS looks like. So it's simply a side factorized wave function. Then we can turn on this knob, create a slightly entangled state. And then when you turn more, you see that these connections here become thicker and thicker. So they can carry more and more correlations and then finally create a strong entangled state. And we can check what happens with our solution. Okay, so we found the state here on the square lattice. But one question which we asked ourselves was, is it nevertheless possible to stabilize some SU4 singlets in this state, so as previously predicted? And the answer is yes. So when we move on to the checkerboard lattice, which has additional diagonal couplings here, then we obtain such a quadromerized state, so where SU4 singlets are predominantly formed between four neighboring sites. So again, these thick blue bonds here show you the low energy bonds, and here will be the high energy bonds. So you can also see that there are actually two possible ways to cover the lattice with these singlets. So the ground state is twofold degenerate. And again, we also found consistent results here with from ED. And then let me also mention that these type of states have also been called a simplex solid state in a paper by Arawas or Valence cluster states. Okay, now in both of these cases, we found an ordered state. And now the question is, what happens if we go to the honeycomb lattice where quantum fluctuations are typically stronger? And it turns out that in this case, quantum fluctuations are indeed so strong that they destroy the order in the system, so that we end up with a disordered state, so which we could call a spin orbital liquid or a four-color liquid in this case. And this is simply a cartoon of this. Okay, so let me also show you the IPEPS results. If we take an IPEPS with a 2 × 2 unit cell and a small bond dimension, then this is actually the state we obtain. And it looks very similar to the one we found on the square lattice. So again, it has some dimerization with two types of dimers. But now when we look at the dimer order parameter as a function of the bond dimension, then we see that it gets strongly suppressed and it seems to vanish in the large D limit. So this shows that this dimerization is not stable in this case. So if you go to larger and larger, more and more quantum fluctuations, they will eventually destroy this dimerization. Then we found another low energy state, which is this particular color ordered state here. But then again, when we look at this color order as a function of the bond dimension, we see that it gets suppressed and it seems to vanish in the large D limit. So this finally implies that these pictures here only reflect the short range physics in the system, and that the true ground state, so that there's actually no true long range order in the system, so that the ground state is disordered. So that would be a spin orbital liquid in this case. Now to get further insight, we also did a variational Monte Carlo study. So that was work mainly done by Miklos and Carlo, where we tried different variational projected fermionic ansatz wave functions. So the idea is to start from a free fermionic Hamiltonian for the four colors of fermions, and then take the wave function at quarter filling, do a Gutzwiller projection to project out multiple occupied sites, and then you can evaluate quantities with the Monte Carlo sampling. And then by varying these hopping amplitudes here, you can try, you can get different trial wave functions. Now here we found that the best energy we obtained with the pi flux state, so which is obtained by taking all these chi's here equal in magnitude, and then the signs in such a way that multiply them around the hexagon, you obtain a minus one. Okay, so here you see a comparison of the variational energies. So these two lines are the IPEPS results from the two different unit cell sizes. And these green stars here are the pi flux state. So you can see it is slightly higher than the best IPEPS result, but it's considerably lower than the other trial wave functions which we tested. Okay. And now a particular feature of this ansatz is that it has a Dirac spectrum at quarter filling. And it reproduces the short-range color-color correlations which we found with IPEPS and also with linear flavor wave theory. But it has indeed no long-range order, but algebraic decaying correlations. And then this state not only has a good energy, but the correlations are also in good agreement with exact diagonalization. So here shown for a 24-psi cluster. So on the left, you have the correlations obtained from VMC. And on the right side, it's ED, and the main features are well reproduced. Okay, so to summarize the story, so first we found that IPEPS pointed towards a disordered state, and then we found a variational wave function which has a low energy and which reproduces the short range physics, the same short range physics as we obtained with IPEPS. But there's indeed no long range order, but algebraic decaying correlations in this wave function. And there's also agreement with ED. So that's why we think that this is rather strong support that the ground state in this case is really an algebraic spin orbital liquid. Okay, so an open question is to what extent that these results are related to the experimental findings of a spin orbital liquid state in this barium copper antimony compound. I mean, this is surely much more complicated than the simple model we studied. So let's say that's an interesting direction for future investigations, but currently it's not really clear if there's a strong relation. Now, finally, let me mention that we generalized our studies also to other types of SUN Heisenberg models, where we found many different states. So, for example, a Plaquet state on the SU3 honeycomb lattice, or so-called simplex solid state on the SU3 Kagome, and so on. Three sublattice Neel order for the SU3 square triangular, and so on. So there's many generalizations. So you can take different lattices, other values of n. You can use different representations of SUN, and you can also go to XXZ type models. And in all these cases, IPEPS turned out to be very useful to get the ground state, because in all these cases, you have a sign problem. Okay, so let me summarize. So I showed you that the symmetric Kugel-Chomsky model has interesting ground states on different lattices. So this dimer Neel ordered state on a square lattice, a quadrimerized state on the checkerboard, and finally this algebraic spin orbital liquid. Then finally, this work also is an example of recent progress in the simulation of strongly correlated systems. So I try to show you a bit what you can do with IPEPS. And then finally, by doing a combination of several methods, we were able here to get some consistent picture of the physics in these models. And with this, I would like to thank you for attention.
To go back to the original in terms of the tau and S sort of spins, you can form a singlet the tau spins,
yes,
and also with the physical spin. Now there is frustration in honeycomb lattice,
yes,
so in that sense they may start resonating. Whereas in the case of square lattice, things are similar. So I wonder whether you can see it in the wave function that differentially the orbital singlets and the spin singlets are avoiding each other. They live in different bonds and resonate in a correlated way.
Yes, we have not checked for this, so I'm not 100% sure, let's say. But
because your Hamiltonian has, say, the product of two, S dot S and
yes, exactly.
So when one is trying to do a singlet, the other
yes, exactly, yes. Two. Yeah, in principle, we see that also in this case, right? So let's see. Here in this picture here, right? So we exactly. So one the spins or the orbitals tend to form singlets, and then we have kind of the other component which then forms
the. So the orbital singlet. Both start resonating.
Starting resonating, yes.
You have the same frustration in the square and honeycomb. I don't think the this aspect is different between honeycomb.
The coordination number is
it's lower on the honeycomb.
It's lower, yeah.
That's right. But it's not a frustration issue.
I mean, enhanced quantum fluctuation. That may be the.
So maybe you mentioned, but what's the power law that you get for the algebraic decay of the spin spin? Correlation function on honeycomb lattice. Did you quote a power law?
Yes. Not sure if I remember if it was three half or. But I have to check. I don't.
Numerically from 3/2. So.
Yes, I think so. But let me check, and I will tell you.
So does it mean that we finally have an example of system in two dimensions where tensor networks manage to say something new?
Well, let's say so. The first work was on the square lattice,
right?
And let's say we did not expect to find this state at all. So if you look at the previous predictions, there was nothing which
so
resembled
that would be an example where...
So let's say this would be an example that thanks kind of to unbiased simulations, we found something which we did not expect in the end. So that would be, yes, I would say that's an example.
And then you have these extrapolations with 1 over d.
Yes.
That seem to tend to a straight line. Is there any understanding? I mean, you could have extrapolated with 1 over d squared.
Yes. So this is really only empirical. So there is some understanding in one dimension for critical systems. So this, this finite descaling. But in 2 dimensions, we're still lacking understanding.
But are you systematically seeing something that resembles a straight line?
In several models, yes. So this is in the end empirical, but
but you would only expect a straight line if it's critical. If it's gapped, then you would expect that
it goes faster.
Well,
yes.
But at some point, it doesn't change anymore.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
If you saturate.
Yes.
Is that related maybe with your update? I mean, the optimization scheme?
So that was full update.
Full update.
Yes.
So I have a short question. Mm-hmm. Since you have 4 levels, say, mm-hmm. can you rewrite your original Hamiltonian term to the spin 3 half model? Some anisotropy, the spin 3 half model.
Yes, I think so. So
you could advantage to the model with these.
Maybe, yes, but let me see.
Surely
you could formulate it in that way, but I don't remember how it would look like, so yes.
Yes, your force matter would be hidden in that language.
It would be hidden, yeah. But something else will manifest, you know. Long range order.
Yes.
Do you have an idea how much entanglement you need per bond? So is there some notion of Schmidt coefficients on every bond, such that you could actually say, well, if I would like to represent this with an NPS, like with the snake or the cylinder with whatever, 7 sides, I would need that large bond. I mean, these kind of things, the bond dimensions you need in the snake or something?
Not that we would understand this. I mean, surely you can get something like weights on the bonds. You can get this and then see how these weights decay, but these weights are not have nothing to do with the Schmidt coefficients. And I mean,
be the tensor product of these weights would give rise to the Schmidt coefficients. It would be. Well, that's my question.
Yes, it would be interesting to understand this. Yes, but
we don't know. We looked at tax representation and MPS representations, see how efficient tax was, but it certainly seemed like there was some loss of efficiency in that. So you've avoided some of the ordinary spin systems so far. Is that true? Is that
I did. So what I did is Shastri-Sutherland model.
Uh-huh.
And I think in that case we got quite an accurate estimate of the phase boundaries. So this was let's say there were results for. With series expansion and ED and all these things, and I think they all did not really give accurate results for the phase boundary. And that's what we got. So, I mean, this intermediate phase was not entirely clear, but one of the predictions was actually this Plackett phase, and we confirmed this, and then also could get quite an accurate estimate of the extension of this intermediate phase.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Okay.